Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is our final Comedy Film Nerd Studio Show, episode 495. We're glad you're here. We want to thank you guys for an amazing journey. But don't worry, we've still got the live show on Thursday, and that will be recorded as a podcast, so you will get to hear that as well. But we thought it'd be really cool to have one of the people that started this entire company with us a decade ago join us for the final studio show. And it wasn't easy. He had to get off work. So
I did.
He has a real job. So it's a process. You have to submit time off. You have to wait for a reply.
And I got a text last night at 11 saying, hey, yeah, could you make sure when you're in, you might have to do this orientation tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, you remember I took the day off.
ladies and gentlemen, that is Neil T. Weekly, the voice of the website, pretty much.
Why, who
he's been writing. I'd say if we added up volume-wise, 90% of the words on the website are probably yours.
Probably.
Yeah, and
God we're not paying per word.
Yes. So,
if you were to calculate per word, what would it be, Neil? Half a cent?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a mathematician.
Yeah.
Honestly, not that good at math in general, but.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we are happy to welcome one last time into the studio, Neil T. Weekly. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy work schedule to come by.
Yeah, some time away from the office. Yeah. It's a good time.
So, I did want to mention, too, I know I had said the Kickstarter ends. It actually ends tonight at midnight, so there is still time to pledge. We are a little bit behind. Actually, we're thousands behind, but you guys can rally and get us there by midnight. That is Pacific time. It is creeping up. It's climbing up. You guys, I'm seeing the names of the backers. It's 90% Comedy Film Nerds fans, and I really appreciate it, but we still may be able to get to it. We've got till midnight tonight. I'll talk a little bit more about it later, but for now, let's talk about some movies, our last studio episode. Now, Graham, you saw Dark Waters, and when I was pulling the trivia on this, I found this really interesting. It's the second film Mark Ruffalo has appeared in dealing with the DuPont family, whereas the first was actually Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
And but any DuPont murderers in this movie?
Are there
not ever?
You can't get close to Pat family without somebody dying. This is another. Foxcatcher was a true story.
Yes.
This is, Mark Ruffalo was obviously in Spotlight, which is a true story.
Yes.
So this is about an actual lawyer who's working at this big law firm in Cincinnati.
So it's based on a real person.
A lot of real people.
Mm-hmm.
He's originally from, the lawyer is originally from West Virginia, and this farmer comes to him and says, hey, like my cows are dying and there's all this poison and stuff happening, stuff like that. And he just is told, the law firm that he works for represents other chemical companies. Like, they're in the business of protecting big chemical companies.
Because that's in the trailer where he's like a big corporate lawyer who switches sides.
Yeah, he makes it pretty clear in the trailer.
And so it goes through this process. I mean, overall, it's a very good movie. If I'm going to nitpick, it's long, but I don't know. After I thought about it, I don't know if the filmmakers can, what they could have done, because this is a story that started in 98, 99.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, there's like litigation and stuff and going into 2015. So how do you tell that story? I mean, it's like the Spotlight story was easier to tell because it was just over a couple year period. The Spotlight team jumped on the story. Obviously, the Catholic abuse thing was a much larger story within the city of Boston, but the Spotlight, they just focused on that Spotlight team. Between when they started to get involved in it and when the story actually dropped, that led to all of the uncovering. Where this is like, so I don't know, it was a little long, but afterwards I was like, well, God, shit, I don't know. What would cutting more time out of it? While I was watching, I was like, oh, this is a little too long. But afterwards, I thought, I don't know. Maybe it needed to be this long. There's a couple scenes in there where I just wondered, and we've talked about this a lot during biopics, where there was like a fight with his wife about he's spending too much time on the case. It just felt like I wanted to know, did the stresses of this case infect the marriage, which it very well could have. It's very stressful.
Yeah. I was going to say that wouldn't be that unrealistic.
That wouldn't be that unrealistic, but the way it was handled felt a little like I've seen this scene in Hollywood before.
Mm-hmm.
So that led, anytime I sort of get taken out of it, like, that just feels like Hollywood. Did Hollywood just tack that on in there? Versus that was an authentic thing that really happened based on the person's book or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I remember we talked about in Hidden Figures, that scene with the bathroom and Kevin Costner knocks down the sign and he's the big hero and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So this is like, there was just a couple scenes where I just was like, huh, but I feel like that's maybe me nitpicking.
Well, that's interesting because when I saw this trailer, it really felt like the entire thing was a Hollywood contrivance. It really felt like a lawyerly green book. It really felt lawyerly that way. Like, book. Yeah, this is like, this is Hollywood's version of corporate evil and how one man can, you know, change the system and all that. Like, but it didn't have that based in reality feel to it. It had that Hollywood like fantasy story feel to it in the trailer. So my question is, the actual film, did it feel more realistic and grounded than the trailer?
Yeah, that's actually my question too, because I felt that the trailer, just the way it was cut, felt like it was going to be really heavy-handed. I mean, obviously the material is serious and, you know, it's heavy, but I had that same sort of question about the tone, and did it feel like realistic?
It did. I think because it's a 2-hour and 20-some-minute, almost maybe 2.5-hour movie, you know, again, that the trailer just made it seem like court drama and he stands up against the big court and he's the good guy or whatever, where it really didn't go into the subtleties and the time it took. He didn't just go, all right, hey, big law firm, I'm going to fight our benefactors. And they went, what? Like, it was a slow process. He's like, look, you know, we don't represent DuPont. I'm just going to do a friendly send over a thing. Hey guys, give us the information. I don't want to get into a big, and you see how inside it is, you know, because initially it's like, they're at a cocktail party and, hey Bob, can you just give me that report? Yeah. You know, like you see how, we're all on the same team here. This is just lawsuits of formality. I just want to make this farmer guy happy and he'll go away and we'll call it a night. You know, like, so the story, it is a little better than how it was depicted in the trailer, because it goes into the subtleties and some of the characters, some of the West Virginia, this one West Virginia farmer. Now, I don't know this area of West Virginia, so maybe I'm wrong, but the one guy had like a West Virginia, and I was like, what is that?
You've performed in that area.
Yes. But like, you're right. I mean, I have performed in that area, but have I spent time with like rural West Virginia farmers? Do some of them have this accent? I don't know. Maybe they do. So maybe that's the case. But like, I think is it Spotlight amazing, Best Picture, you know, all these Academy nominations and awards, but Spotlight won Best Picture that year.
Yeah.
No, it's not that good. There's some good moments in it. There's some good, characters around it, but then some of it felt like probably what you guys garnered from the trailer of, well, this actually happened and we're going to give it a little too Hollywood-y of a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where I was like, okay, it took me out periodically, but then there's some really poignant moments and it is a true story. And it does show the, in my opinion, fairly accurately, the corruption of how DuPont has been poisoning thing. And look, it's about Teflon and according to this film, everyone has some trace amounts of this chemical in their body.
Well, in the bloodstream.
Yes. Yeah, I'm thinking about how many people have a Teflon pan or did for how many decades?
I had one for years.
Sure. So did we.
Teflon cooking pan. Mm-hmm. Everyone had one.
And then you got rid of it when you heard they were awful. And we all went to stainless steel.
That's exactly what happened. Yes.
Precisely.
Yep.
Sure.
So it's like, it was really like that stuff and the way it was handled and makes you go, oh wow. I mean, I don't know. It's a good movie. It's worth watching. There's really Mark Ruffalo, man, he's so good. I mean, you look at him in Foxcatcher, he's a completely different guy. The guy he is in Spotlight is a completely different guy. This is the guy who plays the Hulk. It is a completely different guy. Mm-hmm, so he's a really solid actor and he's a pretty decent advocate and activist and stuff. Like he was a really big advocate for, you know, clergy abuse survivors after Spotlight came out, because obviously I'm sure people came up to him and he did a lot of research and he met with the real, like all of the actors in Spotlight met with the real people. So I'm assuming Mark met with the real guy that he was playing in this. Hmm. And there's little cameos and stuff of the actual people in there. So it's like, it was a pretty good dramatization of this. I mean, and I guess it was unfair of me to compare it to Spotlight, because Spotlight is such a good movie and won all these awards. But I think it's definitely, it's worth watching. And will it get some Oscar nominations? Yes. Is it Best Picture? No.
Mm, okay.
But it's a good film. I'd check it out.
Okay. And you said it's like almost 2.5 hours?
Yes. That's
how was that? What did you feel about the time?
I did feel like, I said, there was moments where I was like, and then I got really engaged. There was moments where I got super engaged and like forgot where I was at, and I was really in the film.
Okay, cool.
And I wonder how much of that is just the spoiledness we all have of streaming services, where we can stop and start
whenever we want,
you know, which the movie The Irishman we're going to get into, I'm sure we all watched it in that capacity. So
So
all right,
cool.
Let's go right into The Irishman. Now, this, before we start talking about it, this is really, I think The Irishman is kind of a watershed moment for film and streaming right now, because it's hitting it in a really interesting way. One of them is that it is basically, it's a miniseries. It's not a feature film. It's a miniseries that is packaged like a feature film that is getting a qualifying run for the Oscars, but then is also being consumed like a miniseries on streaming. And it is set up structurally like a miniseries, because you have all these time jumps back and forth. There's easily spots that you could go, all right, well, this is a good place to stop, and then come back in like an hour. Like there's literally
places that look like it could have dropped a commercial.
Exactly.
In. Like it's going to fade out. We're going to go cut another scene. It's like, good time to go start making dinner.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I did.
Another guy get whacked.
Yeah.
Great time to go get some food.
Yeah. And, you know, I watched it over the span of like 5 days. Like,
I did not.
Did you binge the entire thing at once?
I did. But like I said, I was like, okay, it was like late Saturday afternoon I started it, right? And I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is a good place. Yeah. I'm going to start making dinner. And so I'd stop it, make dinner. And that's got some time to come back, and I'd watch another 20 minutes and then bring the food.
Right.
So, I mean, I watch it all at once, but.
And I think the point that I want to make here about this is because it's irrelevant what you call it, whether it's a film or a miniseries or how you consume it. It doesn't matter. It's a piece of content on a streaming service. And, you know, depending on how you consume it or what it is, it's the people that are getting up in arms about it is like, well, what's it qualify for? Is it an Academy Award? I mean, it's like the dumb old school Hollywood qualifications of like, you know, what box that we're supposed to put these things in. And I don't think The Irishman fits in any of those boxes. Mm. And I think that's a good thing because I think it's a really, really interesting, almost like an experiment. Like it's almost like you see the span of not only Scorsese's career, but of all these amazing actors, because you're like, you see them de-age and you see them aged up. And at one point I was like, I don't remember how old they are in real life.
I just know because, they're all older than me.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I know now they don't look like that, and I'm pretty sure I don't think they look like that. And you know, and one of the things, because the internet gets upset over everything now, is that, well, you know, when you de-age, one of these guys like Robert De Niro or Al Pacino to like a 40-year-old man, he's still older, so he doesn't move like a 40-year-old. But I don't give a shit. Let a, let an older actor move the way he fucking wants. It's fine. I can suspend disbelief enough with all of the computer graphics to think that he's 40.
And it's part of being an actor and being a person watching an actor do what he does.
You know what we used to
do? Acting.
Yeah, you know what we used to do? Have a different actor for playing him as as a young man.
And now we have the opportunity actually to have the same actor be himself.
It's
and technology can make them look younger.
Yeah, I think we can overlook these things.
They have this really cool thing on Netflix. It's called The Irishman: A Conversation. I don't know if you've watched that.
I saw it and I almost did.
I would watch that because it goes into this very thing, and Scorsese talks about the technology initially was, you know, you got to wear like mocap faces to do this. Yeah. And he said, that's not going to work because we need, he goes, or we do the old school way. We just pack on makeup to try to make them look 20 years younger. And this, he talked to this graphics guy, and the graphics guy, he kept saying, you got to make it different. You got to figure it out. And so the graphics guy came back. And so they showed on the set, there's literally like four cameras. So, you know, Robert De Niro or whatever, and him and Pesci, let's say they're in a scene where they're a lot younger, there's like four cameras mapping or whatever. I don't know the technology mapping all this. And Pesci was joking around like, I don't know what camera to look in. There was like 15 cameras to look in, but it was like, it allowed Scorsese to direct these guys without, who are old school film actors. Like they're not going to want to run around with mocap suits and green screen and this, that, and the other thing. So
why are all these plastic balls on my suit? What does this mean?
Like, this is just weird.
Is this Halloween?
I didn't sign up for this.
I
was in Deer Hunter.
Exactly. Are they going to look at each other with like balls on their face and talk about, you know, office got to go?
Sure. Can't imagine any one of them doing that. But it's also, you know, the whole grip. I mean, we're talking, all of them, almost all of them had worked together and were together in the 70s.
Yeah.
So.
It was cool. And for me, I was like, the film purist in me was like, oh, I should see this on the big screen because it's Scorsese. But then I was like, man, 3 hours and 20 minutes, I just can't do it. And
it's a lot now.
And I'm glad I broke it up because
without an intermission.
I know.
Yeah, without an intermission. Exactly. And and parts of the movie I liked. Parts of it I felt like, well, this has been done before, even though it's a true story. These are real people.
Yes.
This is based on a guy's book, I Heard You Paint Houses, the guy that De Niro plays.
Right, Frank Sheeran.
But like The Godfather was to see that style of stuff, when The Godfather came out in the 70s, was groundbreaking.
Right.
When Goodfellas came out, it was, because this was like a cross between almost like Casino and Goodfellas. Mm-hmm. Goodfellas was groundbreaking because it didn't, you know, you could argue that the Godfather sort of glamorized the criminal element, right? Yeah. And Goodfellas went, these guys are psychos.
Right.
Yeah.
These guys are, they're not just good guys protecting the neighborhood. Like, you gotta be a psychopath.
Loyal family, that's all.
You gotta be a psychopath to be in that business. And so, those were groundbreaking depictions that we hadn't ever seen before. This is like, we've seen a lot of this before. The thing that stood out that I really liked was we've never seen Joe Pesci. He's always the crazy guy.
Right.
Casino, Goodfellas. Yeah. He is always the psycho that can't be controlled. And he's causing problems. And so he was the calm guy going,
he's the grounded guy.
Jimmy, hold on now. This is how it's got to be. So it was really, that was interesting to see.
Yeah.
And this technology was interesting to see. And, you know, it's still really good storytelling. There's a lot about it I liked.
It's true. You know, it's great old school filmmaking. Yeah. It had a weird feel to it that I really liked, that it showed me like all these actors that I've grown up watching in crime movies in a new crime movie with a new story that was basically being told by a master storyteller.
Yeah.
But it also had that really kind of nostalgic retro feel. I'm like, oh, I remember watching Mean Streets and Taxi Driver and Goodfellas and all those, just growing up watching these films. And I felt like it was almost like a the way Stranger Things did it with the 80s. This was like, you know, Scorsese kind of like showing you a new mob story, but playing homage to like all of the mob stories that he's done before. It's a weird mix of like something new, but also something comfortable that can so easily go off the rails where it's, it's, and I thought I loved it. And at 3 hours and 30 minutes, it's the longest film Martin Scorsese has directed and the longest mainstream film released in over 20 years. At one point, the film, remember Joe Pesci's character instructs Frank to meet with a fairy named Fairy. This is a reference to David Fairy, who some believe had a hand in both the Bay of Pigs invasion and JFK's assassination. The connection is Pesci actually played David Fairy in Oliver Stone's film JFK. So it's another character.
Interesting.
And this is, now it said, I don't know, I don't believe this one. I think this is PR line. Joe Pesci refused multiple times to come out of retirement in order to appear in the film. Some sources say the actual number of refusals was 50.
50 seems exorbitant.
I think so.
I'm sure he could have half a dozen times and say, hey, no, look, I know you want me, but I'm just, I'm not, I don't want to come back. But 50 seems
the number was probably closer to 3. So I really love this film, and I consumed it like a miniseries. I didn't watch it as a film, and I feel like it really felt like it was structured that way for sure. And it was just all kind of tied together for awards purposes to make it an actual film.
Yeah.
But one of the things I really liked about it, too, is, you know, a lot of times you're like, well, how many more mob movies are we going to see? How many more stories are there to tell? We already know Jimmy Hoffa disappeared, you know, all of those things. But to show it from the insider perspective of his basically a hitman slash bodyguard and to actually see the progression, because, you know, it was about Jimmy Hoffa, but it wasn't. It was really about Robert De Niro's character.
Yeah, Frank Sheeran.
Yeah, Frank Sheeran. And what I really, really loved about it was, you know, Scorsese never shirks away from showing, look, these guys, they're in nice suits. They've got, you know, they eat good food all the time. They've got beautiful wives. Oh, but no, they could be dead in any second flat. You know, somebody could come up to him with a gun in the back of the head. And what he would do is he would put graphics on like, see this guy enjoying himself at a party?
That was great. Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, he was shot in the back of the head and like, you know, in 5 years from now.
Yeah,
and
that was
left for dead in a parking lot. Yeah.
That was amazing.
For time of the head in 1980.
That was every time. Hey, it's Johnny Two Fingers. Oh, and there'd be a graphic shot in an alleyway with a shotgun. It was like
the graphic was never a died of old age in
Well, it was one.
Yeah.
It was like
one guy.
Yeah.
Died of naturally cancer, whatever it was.
If I did have one little nitpick, it's this is, and this kind of goes true for all of Scorsese's films, is because there's not a lot of time in a film to explore this. Is you never really see how it affects the family. Like, it always only gets touched on. Like, you know, how do the daughters know their father's a hitman.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you could see the estrangement and also, like, you know, they, they're like, well, you know how hard it was for us.
I thought it was interesting how they handled, in particular, the daughter Peggy.
Yes.
And for some reason, I'm old man brain.
Anna Paquin.
Anna Paquin.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, she has
no lines.
Maybe she says 3 words at one point late in the film. But
keep going,
it's
Anna Paquin, I'm sure she'll have more to say in the next scene. And then, nope.
But her expression on her face, every time she's like looking at her father, just that expression and that the body language. I mean, she said a lot without having to say anything.
Yep. And a testament to Scorsese and Anna and the child actor was you started to see that body language when she was like 7.
Yeah, when she's really young.
He'd come home, whatever, covered in blood or something, and she'd just look at him like at a young age, she went, oh, I'm terrified of my father because he's a violent hoodlum.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she just like made a decision at age 8.
Yeah.
Nope.
Where are you going, Daddy?
Yeah, where are you
going? Going to work.
Yeah.
Go back to bed.
Yeah.
Then he leaves. It's like, after seeing him put a gun in his belt, you know, exactly. I mean, it's like,
well, there's I don't see a badge. What could you be doing?
Yeah. There's the other great scene, too, where he's talking to the daughter that he still has a relationship with. And that daughter's like, Dad, do you think this was easy having you as a dad? This was
because
not,
just because I didn't complain and I'm like not like your youngest daughter. It's like hello.
Yeah,
it's always I did this
picnic.
For you to protect you.
It wasn't
and like that was always the excuse.
Yeah,
like, sure.
No, you're a murderous psychopath.
Yeah, yeah. You like beating dudes up.
Yeah,
yeah,
and shooting them
and killing them. You like killing people,
dragging people out into the street, smashing through their door, and beat them and kick them in the on the curb,
throwing guns,
watching
into a
people.
River.
Yeah,
I mean it's
you like that.
Yeah.
Got some of the asides is like, oh, this is where everybody throws bodies or guns or whatever. But if they ever dredge this part of the river, you know,
like, yeah,
and I love that all the
camera pans
on the guns at the bottom of the
water.
And I will say this because they had more space and more room. Where it really got explored as how the family was affected by mob families was The Sopranos, because that was kind of half the show, was like how the family would interact with like basically having a father as a mob boss. But there's not as much time to do that. So, I mean, I thought this was a great kind of thing. I know it like, you know, it had a troubled production where it like, you know, people didn't pick it up and then Netflix actually picked it up. This is a rare case of like Netflix picking it up when it wasn't a garbage project.
Well, I mean, plus, I mean, if you're gonna pick a movie up, pick one up with this cast, with Scorsese directing. I mean, you know, like those are things that literally even Netflix couldn't fuck that up.
Right.
I mean, really.
Yeah, you've got De Niro, Pacino, and Scorsese. Boy, if this is a disaster, you can't even blame Netflix at that point.
Absolutely. I mean, it's with, So if you're going to pick something up, this is the one to pick up.
Yeah.
Let it, even if it's 3.5 hours long.
And one of the things they did talk about in that conversation, which if you watch this movie, I would absolutely watch that conversation, is Scorsese says, you know, should I have done this project for Netflix or in the, you know, and he just like, should I shoot it to look like, and he just went, I'm going to just make this movie the way I want to make it. And you can see it however you want to see it. You know, he just said, I'm not catering this for streaming or Netflix or the theater or the big screen.
I'm just making a movie.
I'm just going to make a movie and however you want to see it, man, go for it.
Yeah,
and
which I think is great.
It's a great conversation too, because you also, as it's taught, this is the first time Pacino and Scorsese worked together.
Yes.
So you see that.
I keep thinking of Heat and then like, oh no, that was De Niro and
Pacino. So those guys know each other. But I don't know if Pesci and Pacino have worked together. Have they?
Pesci and Pacino. That's a good question.
Aaron?
Pesci and Pacino?
Nothing's coming to mind which they've worked together. I'm thinking, was there a Home Alone sequel that Pacino was in?
Sorry, the lean years? Yeah. I don't know. I'm also trying to think about Heat. Who was it? Was that a De Palma? That wasn't...
No, Michael Mann.
Michael Mann, right. I'm sorry.
I mean, every time, you know, you look, there's like a, you know, a star from a 70s film in this, you know, in a shot. Even it's like, oh, well, Scorsese isn't in this one. Pacino isn't in this one. Oh, but there's Harvey Keitel. So, you know, there's always somebody.
There's the one woman from Orange is the New Black is in there. And then all the old mobster guys that
only work in Scorsese films.
They've all just kind of like rotate around.
Yeah. I swear he's got like his own casting division. It's like there's like, you know, there's a casting department. Scorsese movies, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's all just the Italian mob guys.
Probably Scorsese just picks up the phone and calls them.
directly.
I'm making a movie. What are you doing this day? Okay, I'll see you there.
Yeah.
You know, like it's don't need anyone.
You want me to call Boots? That. Johnny Two Cash?
Johnny Two Cash.
So, all right. So definitely check out The Irishman.
Yeah.
You know, it's really good. And look at it through, don't look at it of like a lens of like, oh, it's too long of a movie or it shouldn't be streaming. I got to see it in a theater. Just enjoy the content any way you like. You want to see it in a theater? Great. You want to break it up like I did into 5 days watching a Netflix? Also fine. I think just consume it any way you like, because I think you'll enjoy it either way.
I think so.
So, all right. Graham, last time for the Patreon sponsors.
Oh, Patronies, thank you so much.
And
well, I guess we'll read it on the final show, won't we?
So sure, why not? Yeah.
So technically, there'll be one more.
Last
time in a studio.
Last time in a studio. And don't worry, you will be getting your Patreon bonuses. You'll be getting a last monthly, weekly film news review wrap-up. That will be available very, very shortly, you'll get that.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Rulon's got some short horror stories for sale. The first is called The Shell, and it is a Lovecraftian tale about a neighborhood that loses power and becomes victim to an unknown monster waiting in the dark. The second is called She, about a high school held under the dark spell of an evil cult reader. Leader, not reader. Right now, both are on Amazon leader. Kindle for 99 cents. You can find them by going to happyhorrorshowproductions.com and clicking the Buy Short Stories tab. And Fanboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comics news, your movie news, TV news, and amazing interviews with industry insiders and artists. Fanboyplanet.com, fanboyplanet.com. Coffee Over Suicide has wrapped Season 2 and will return in 2020 from its new home in California. Coffee Over Suicide would like to thank everyone at Comedy Film Nerds for 10 years of excellent service, and we cannot wait to see what the future holds. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. It's coffeeoversuicide.com. And the Art Podcast with Rebecca Evans. Thanks to Comedy Film Nerds for all the laughter and movie reviews. Look forward to seeing what's next. When we move past hesitation and we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. Hear inspiring interviews at theartpodcast.com with an S. Tony McFadden's books are 100% low-carb and high-protein. Aussie Noir, crime fiction, international thrillers, and a dash of light sci-fi. You're guaranteed to find something you like. Head to tonymcfadden.net/mybooks. Find something to read, since there'll be no point going to the movies after CFN closes its doors. And from Andy Bowman, every week on the Geek 101 podcast, Ariel and Andy get together to discuss, critique, review, and sometimes bicker about the latest in geek news and pop culture. Become a listener and join the conversation by listening to the Geek 101 podcast wherever you download your podcasts. Jerome Sullivan, calling on Hollywood and Netflix and Disney, HBO, and Apple TV, urge you to go to jcsscreenplays.com. That's jcsscreenplays.com to check out the briefs of his completed movie and television scripts, including a murder mystery, sci-fi action thriller, coming-of-age musical, horror, rom-com, and more. Visit jcsscreenplays.com. And a contemporary classical composer who writes music people actually like. Congratulations to Comedy Film Nerds for 10 wonderful years of podcasting. DavidHeinick.com, HEINICK.com. And Scott Gakey. Look for his bourbon from Lodge Pole Distilling when it's ready around next summer. Neil, you like bourbon, right?
Bourbon.
Yes. Tagline is drink cheap, not shitty. And from Will Leonard, Will and Katie would like to thank Comedy Film Nerds fans and the Audacity Performing Arts Project for their support of her riding to end MS. We'd like you to know that she is riding again the Bike MS, Bike Texas, new course from Houston to College Station. All proceeds go to help people who are living with MS, as well as going to finding a cure for this debilitating disease. Please go to willthetd.com/CFN to find a link to her donation page. Now, the last one from Scott Gerwitz is a special one that Graham must read in a Bane accent.
Where's this one now?
That's the last one. It's the Scott Gerwitz Graham must read promo in Bane accent. That is the requirement for the promo.
Do you feel in charge? At the Bane Podcasting Network, we'll put you and your lovely, lovely voice in charge of your own podcast. We take podcasting from the corrupt, the rich, the oppressions of generations who have kept you down with the myths of audible.com residuals.
Oh, God, that's a little too close to home.
And we give it back to the people. Podcasting is yours. None shall interfere. Do as you please. Without our help, the microphone will betray you. I know you think the microphone is your ally, but you were merely adopted the Sennheiser. I was born with it, molded by it. I didn't hear the sound check until I was already a man, but then it was nothing to me but deafening. Take control of the microphone at the Bane Podcasting Network, crashing the internet with no survivors.
That's great. All right, let's get into some trailers. Now, these just dropped, so I think these are two fitting trailers to go out on.
Let's
talk about Wonder Woman 1984 with a mysterious appearance by Chris Pine in it, which must be a time travel element somewhere.
Let's hope.
Or he's an Eternal. Well,
I hope it's that he's an Eternal.
Borrowed from Marvel.
Now it says unmute. Now it says. Oh, there we go. We'll start over.
Here we go, of course.
This is going to be great.
I got some 80s music, some vector sure. designs.
It hasn't been what you probably think it has.
And Kristen Wiig.
We all have our struggles.
Have you ever been in love?
A long, long time ago.
Oh, flashback.
You?
So many times. Yeah, all the time.
Order.
Welcome to the future.
When a lot of these actresses and actors were born.
Yes. Well, why shouldn't it be? All you need is to want it.
They borrowed them all from Stranger Things.
That's good. Just her
Think
kicking
about
ass
finally
with people in spandex?
Everything you always wanted.
No, in the 80s, Graham.
Oh.
But you can save the world.
Steve.
Time travel, replicant, something.
I take what I want in return. Everyone will see.
Wow, she punched a bullet.
That's great. This thing.
Gotta be one with the jet.
The world needs you.
Cool stuff with the lasso, I have to say.
Yeah, definitely.
Not just like for telling the truth.
Yes, it actually does cool stuff.
Back to the mascara.
Nothing good is born from lies. And greatness is not what you think.
Riding the light.
Literally riding.
I know.
Kind of weird Valkyrie outfit at the end.
Yes.
It's all art. That's just a trash can.
It's just a trash can.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what a trash can looks like. They didn't have trash cans in his time.
Not like that.
And of course, they give him a fanny pack.
Yeah.
I don't know. That could be really cool. I honestly like the first one.
I have to say, unfortunately, because of growing up, you know, in the 80s, like, you've already got me halfway. If your material is set in the 80s and it's halfway decent, I'm going to be on board.
I mean,
yeah,
look,
it looks fun. I'm going to see it.
Uh-huh.
After the opening fight sequence on the beach in the first Wonder Woman movie, you had me for a sequel.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like, that movie, we could dispute, we did, the ending, whatever, a little too much that, but I mean... It was a good film, so I'm going to see the sequel.
Yeah, I'll be there. You know, my whole family's going to want to see it, so
we'll
be there.
I'm already there.
They just got 4 tickets.
Yeah, right? They just sold 4 tickets.
Yeah.
And honestly, I want to go, if you told me you had to just pick one reason to go to this, I'd be like, well, I want to at least see how they explain Chris Pine.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how is he there?
Hope it's time travel.
Yeah.
Versus he's a replicant that, you know, and she
or a clone or something.
Yeah, that would bum me out if she's like truly in love and then he's a trick and he's a cyborg or whatever, you know, like she punches his face off and you see that like from the Bionic Man. That would bum me out.
Yeah, that would suck.
But that would be 80s.
It would. It would be very 80s, but let's hope it's a time travel thing.
Yeah. So, all right, the next one is Ghostbusters Afterlife, which has already set the internet abuzz. People are already liking it or incredibly angry for no good reason, but let's see it.
Yeah.
What are you doing here in Somerville anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke.
I will say, even if you're angry about it, should you really be that angry about it?
You can watch all the originals online.
Yeah,
like, you can
just
You
don't have to be angry about Ghostbusters.
This doesn't take away from the other things that already exist.
Now, let's see. Here's the immediate it formula of, like, all right, set it with a bunch of kids.
One of them is Stranger Things.
One is Stranger Things.
Yeah.
So you'll get that Stranger Things
somehow
kid vibe because you actually have one of them.
Yes.
And small town.
No fracking.
Something weird going on. And Paul Rudd.
Shaking on a daily basis.
Talk about fracking in the trailer.
Yeah.
Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
Yeah. Well, it's ghost fracking.
Huh?
It's ghost fracking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a special kind. It gives more energy.
I'm sure Energy Partners figured that out.
Now, until right now, did you have any idea this was a Ghostbuster trailer?
Not at
other
all.
Than it was the...
until he picked up that thing.
Yeah, it picked up the ghost trap.
30 years. New York in the 80s? It's like The Walking Dead. Your dad never mentioned this to you?
It's just my mom. My grandfather died. My mom says we're just here to pick through the rubble of his life.
What?
got to have Slimer in there.
Who are you?
The kids of the Ghostbusters?
Yes. Or one of them. Kids of, it's Egon's kid.
Call it luck. Call it karma. I believe that everything happens for a reason. Come on, darling.
What?
Oh, Echo One through a cornfield.
Echo One.
He has a gunner seat?
That is pretty cool, though. A gunner seat for ghosts. So, okay.
All right, well.
Now, here's the thing. If you're doing another Ghostbuster sequel, there's not a lot you can do. You have to figure out a new take with it. And clearly, this was something that Jason Reitman wanted to explore.
Yeah.
But I will say this, watching this trailer again, I'm not offended by it.
Right.
I'm also not 100% excited about it either.
What's the offense online about?
It's
Everyone's just upset that they're even doing it for that matter.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone just wants to be there again, the original.
And, it's like, well, that's, you know, because the reboot with women didn't work. Now they're trying it again with kids, and like, it's like a weird thing.
I like the reboot with the women.
Yeah, it's
funny.
You can enjoy all of them. Yeah. I can even enjoy the real Ghostbusters animated series.
Wow.
I can enjoy
Chris, that's a
that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big ask. Is that what
Really is, Chris. Now I will say this after I watched the trailer. If you take out the Ghostbusters quote license, this would be an interesting story. I feel like the Ghostbusters license, again, we haven't seen much from the trailer.
Right.
I feel like it was kind of shoehorned in. Like, you know, if you have kids on a remote farm and some weird shit's happening, and then all of a sudden, like, they discover technology that might be able to fight ghosts, I'm already on board. I don't need to see the Ghostbuster symbol on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that would be really cool. Like, what if they invented a dune buggy with a gunner seat? That's fine. You know,
You could have just done this without the Ghostbusters brand.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. For sure. And I would still be on board with it. Mm-hmm.
And why? Because the thing I'm watching this going, I agree, because I'm watching this going, so why is all this Ghostbusters gear from Manhattan now at, Martha Kent's farm?
Yes. Why is Echo 1 in the farmhouse by the field?
Why they rounded it up and drove it all to Kansas?
Well, and he did say his grandfather. So are we talking about was...
Egon, probably.
His grandfather, because that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So not his father, but his grandfather.
And did they all... So they're all dead?
Well, I think from what I heard, they are going to make... appearances in this movie, but I don't know. We don't know what capacity. Like, are they going to be aged up? Is like really? I don't know. We don't know yet.
Yeah. And frankly, I haven't actually definitively read anything about Bill Murray being in it yet.
Well, and that's just the way he likes it.
Probably so.
Doesn't he make that decision like a day before shooting whether he's going to show up or not?
He does sometimes when some films he won't respond because, like I said, he just has the 1-800 number that you just leave a message.
I guess
he just shows up
if it's some sort of like. They reveal some sort of like, Watchmen style or Dark Knight graphic novel series style of Ghostbusters were outlawed and they had to hide this. And so now the old gang comes, the old guys hear about these kids fighting and they're like, we're going to reunite because we all had to live underground because we were hunted. Or if there's some cool...
There's going to be a weird backstory to get where this movie starts.
And if I never see another trailer, I'll be happy. That to me was all I need.
Right.
Like, I'm curious. I don't know. Like, I'm with you. I'm like, it could go either way, but I'm all curious enough to see this now with just that teaser trailer.
Because you know what was interesting, too? They're driving around with Echo One with the gunner seat and they're shooting the proton pack.
Yeah.
But we didn't see any ghosts. We didn't see anything that they were
shooting at. We saw a very, very quick glimpse as they were coming down the road and you saw he was shooting the newspaper boxes.
Right.
You saw a foot on a hood.
You saw just a glimpse of something went by, which I thought was...
Slimer.
But
I thought I saw a foot on a hood like Zool. The Zool.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, like a hellhound.
From the first one.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's
what
that felt like. But I feel like that's you don't want to over trailer this.
Right.
Because we've all discussed over-trailing.
It will be over-trailered.
Yes, it will be over-trailered.
There's going to be a four-minute trailer where we're going to go,
I don't need to see that. I can wait for that one on stream.
Yep. Right. Yeah, and I'll just watch the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, interest peaked. We'll see.
Exactly. So, all right, and the Comedy Film Nerd store is in its final days. We'll be closing it on December 15th. There is some stuff left. There is plenty of DVDs, CFN Guide to Movies, my graphic novel, Long Gone Far Away. I will say this, there are shirts left. We actually do have every size, a few left in every size of the new logo t-shirt. So if you want to check that out, if you want to get one of those before we shut down on the 20th, you can get those then. And then everything will ship out by the 20th. So you should have it in time for Christmas because it'll go out priority mail. So if you want to buy anything now, and especially the new logo shirts, we have a few left. Check them out. All right. So it is the last day of my Kickstarter, and we are a little bit behind by definitely some thousands of dollars. But I know you guys, if we rally to midnight, we can definitely do it. But I did want to mention that you guys have been leaving messages and comments, and I said I would read them. So here we go. The final comments on the Kickstarter message board for Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master from Chris Hare. Love you guys. Really excited for this project. Let's get it done. P.S. Premium Rush was a good fucking film, Graham.
So. Wow. That's the hill you want to die on. All right. Premium Rush was a good movie. Okay. You got
and,
it.
And Tyler Harper, Chris, I support you without reward. Thank you, Chris. All I want is your happiness. I backed your past projects, and there's no reason to miss out on this opportunity. Thank you so much. It's been a great run for CFN. I look forward to what you do in the future. Han shot first. Thank you, Tyler. Emily Penrod, it's been a great ride, guys. Thank you for the hours of entertainment. I felt like I was losing a friend when I heard the podcast was coming to a close. And in a way, it's true. I've loved supporting all your projects. I even have a drain claw.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
One of our first advertisers.
Man, yeah. A drain claw. Thank you so much. So,
much luck with this project and your future endeavors. Thanks so much. From Chris Cash, this one is full of Easter eggs. See if you, I don't even remember some of these. Okay. Maybe you guys do. Thanks, Chris, for taking all those robot loads over the years. I miss having you and Graham in my ears, as I have for almost 9 years, accompanying me in my travels from delivering leaflets in Melbourne, traversing the Shanghai metro, in a cab coming back from the Cambodian killing fields, cycling in the Cantonese summer, taking the train to a haunted punk rock pub in Sydney, and many other things with varying levels of alliteration, nuance, and allegory.
I don't remember all those. Some of them I do.
Some of them, I can remember some of them.
Best of luck in the future. Hashtag should will. Oh. Hashtag JGL.
The should wills from the Oscar episodes. And, JGL.
Pam Myers, thank you so much for all the years of free funny. I was so excited to see a movie with the Comedy Film Nerds for your last Kickstarter. Morgan, never forget. Remember we saw Morgan with Pam Myers?
Yes.
I'm excited to have this chance to say thank you and goodbye. See you at Dynasty Typewriter. We'll see you there, Pam. And Camille Roberts, this is such a fun community. I'll miss the podcast, but exciting to see what you do next. So if you guys can get a pledge in before midnight, before it closes, and drop a comment, I will read it on the live show. So you have one last chance, because it's been 10 years. I'm going to guess you've got something to say.
Come on, so, say it.
So get us there at the end. I know a lot of money comes in at the end. So, and if there's any angel investors out there that could give a couple thousand, there's some higher end rewards. We'd love to have you, and really appreciate the support. This is the last Kickstarter. Wanted to go out on a win, so there is some time left. Thank you so much, guys. All right.
And bring a drain claw to the final show.
Yes, please do. We'll sign it.
I have one claw somewhere.
Any of the weird products we sold. Yeah.
And on DVD and Blu-ray, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we split on this movie. I liked it. You did not. Neil, where did you come down on Once Upon a Time?
You're
going
to be shocked. I just never got around to seeing it.
What?
I know.
Really?
I know. God. It's actually pretty shocking.
Well, it's too long for you to see it between now and Thursday.
Yes. But not as long as The Irishman.
Not as long as The Irishman. I could do it. Chapter 2
was, how do I put this? A disappointment. So
definitely the lesser of the two parts.
Yes. And I really felt like the first thing I said, this is a Stephen King adaptation. Because that's what it looked like. It was messy. Chock full of just gory parts with not a real good through liner story. It was like the typical Stephen King adaptation, whereas the first chapter felt like a real fun actual
it was
horror
great.
Movie. Yeah, it was really good. So
I
don't know what the fuck happened.
I don't know, but you know what? I think this boils down to like the way mm-hmm. they changed the end of this in the film mm-hmm. was better than, well, granted, I never read the book, but remember the original miniseries they did years ago?
Oh, wow.
It was like late 80s or whatever.
With Harry Anderson?
Yes.
And,
yeah, the end of that was, I was probably the most angry I've ever been watching something. Like, couldn't possibly have been after all that great buildup, mm-hmm. and that was the end.
I don't know that the end of it. This one was pretty stupid.
Yeah, but it was. I thought it was better than the original one. Yeah.
All right, that's saying something.
But it was still. I mean, but I think it's inherently.
Yeah.
Just Stephen
King's.
That's
like just what's the deeper hole in the ditch? Which one?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But you know what, Stephen King? Like they say that about a lot of his books. They're like, mm-hmm. well, he never seems to pull out the endings
right.
really well. So it might just be the end.
You know what his answer to that,
story.
Is? Don't care.
Yeah. Can't tell my accountant.
Yes. know how to pull out that ending. So, and premiering this week, Jumanji, The Next Level, a sequel we didn't want nor did we need. You know,
didn't see the first one.
You know what? It was, let me put it this way. It was better than it had any right to be.
Yeah,
it was,
you said that.
Because it followed like a cool like video game premise, which was kind of neat. And so it was fun, and The Rock is always fun and entertaining. But this one feels like, oh, you liked the first one? You know how that was kind of unexpectedly watchable? This one won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is more money.
Is that on the movie poster?
Yeah.
Unexpectedly watchable.
Hashtag, yeah, unexpectedly watchable.
Yeah, it's the old money grab.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, and this, even like this point, where even the trailer looks like, oh, no one's trying. Even the trailer editor's not trying.
Yeah.
It's just like, it literally looks like cobbled together from outtakes from the first movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just kind of put it together. I'm like, just no, release it again.
Maybe that's what this movie is.
We don't do
DVDs anymore. So instead of making extras,
let's just
put together a sequel.
Whatever the janitors sweep up off the editing room floor, we'll just tape it together and throw it into the theater.
Hey, I found this hard drive.
Yeah.
I think we could make there's 90 minutes of crap in here.
Let's put it together. The next movie is Black Christmas. This is the horror movie remake. I don't know how many remakes there have been on this one.
I don't know if there's actually been a lot of them, but I know that it was Black Christmas was a big horror movie.
You know, I do like certain horror movies. I don't like slasher films. I don't like, you know, the serial killer type movies. I especially don't like them mixed with Christmas. I will just say that this movie
shouldn't be together.
Not for me.
Yeah,
you know,
nobody
that I know or in my family will be seeing this film. I know there is an audience for it. It just
I don't
not,
even know though that I you know it's I mean I'm gonna have to mm-hmm. I don't know like I mean like I like horror movies but. I move away from any of that, you know, the hostile and stuff.
Yeah,
and Saw.
Yeah.
I just like, okay, I'm kind of past that.
Yeah.
Give me more atmosphere, make it more of a actual horror,
creepy,
not slasher type stuff so much. Creepy atmosphere.
Mm, I agree.
I don't know that this, or humor, at least, at the very least, if you're going to go gory, I better be laughing my ass off at the same time. Hence, like Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, over the top, ridiculous, you know.
So, now here's the next movie that is for an even smaller member of the audience, the Richard Jewell biopic. And I'm watching this trailer again. Like, I watched like the extended trailer, and then, like, yeah, I know the story. Okay, we're done. How is this going to be an hour and a half long movie? In fact, it's already getting flack. For it being inaccurate.
Yes.
And
Olivia
Wilde's getting shit for her character.
Well, yeah. That,
really?
Because they're saying that the Atlanta, I forget what paper is, they're actually, I think, suing for...
they're suing the film?
Yeah, because like they're saying our reporter didn't bash him. We didn't do that. You know, like
sleeping with the source too. There was another thing where characters like was literally sleeping with the source that never happened in real life.
So they're saying that they've misrepresented the paper and the
because print. Because the trailer looked interesting to me. It's an interesting story. A friend of mine saw a screening of it and said, you know, there's some interesting stuff in it. About, you know, and I said, so how did he come? They said, well, Richard Jewell did some things that were like, you could see why they would have suspected him.
Right.
But also he got fried and he got railroaded a little bit. Mm. And so...
By John Hamm.
Yeah.
By John. Personally, just John Hamm.
Yeah.
John Hamm really has been carrying this axe since 1996.
Yeah. He's been railroading a lot.
You'd think after Mad Men, he'd just keep acting. Yeah, instead, he's really out railroading people. So in seeing the trailer and talking to my friend, I was like, oh, this seems like it'd be an interesting depiction. Like, you know, Clint Eastwood did a really good job with the Sully movie. Mm-hmm. He's done other true stories. I think he did a good job with that. What was it? Invictus, the rugby, the South African rugby story with Matt Damon, which was based on true events.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember that.
You know, I really like the Sully movie too. Like, cause he showed it, the thing that happened from all these different vantage points, which is a cool way to tell a story. So I was like, oh, you know, I kind of remember this Richard. I remember that we got it over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But that kind of bums me out that they took liberties to say the media woman, like, and yeah.
Yeah.
Then so, I don't know. Maybe it's not. Because so I'm told we'll the guy that plays Richard Jewell, he was in the Tonya Harding story, does a really good job of playing this sort of like average guy that wants to be a cop and isn't. And
couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing. Like, I felt like this is a story that, like, okay, well, this would be an interesting 20, 30-minute short film. I don't see it being stretched to a feature, so we'll see.
We don't know how long it is either, do we?
No. Uncut Gems. This is the...
Adam Sandler
Oscar buzz movie, which I've never heard those words together.
I'm interested to see.
They're doing
Punch Drunk Love.
Okay,
that's one
everyone points to out of like the other 100 movies that he's made.
But it's because it's
Chris won't excuse you for
how many times does he do dramatic roles, quote unquote? You know, I mean, it's
one good movie doesn't excuse 100 bad ones.
Well, there's, but to Neil's point though, I get what you're saying.
But it's about the context.
Absolutely,
all the other movies. It's a big, broad, wacky Adam Sandler.
Absolutely.
You can say I'm not a fan of his style of comedic movies.
And it's also the only movie that's backed but directed by an actual auteur.
Right.
Like a really good director. So you wonder, too, why hasn't he done more of those?
Yeah.
You know, in this
span.
Why
did Burt Reynolds make Stroke Erase? You know what I mean?
That is a fair question.
You know what I mean? You watch Deliverance, and you go, man, this is an amazing young actor.
This is an amazing guy.
And then you watch Smokey the Bandit 3. They go get the elephants. You know? I don't know. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
but really, it takes like 4 or 5 good roles to erase Jack and Jill. You know? Really? I mean, if we're waiting these films.
Well, I mean, certainly there's a percentage. Like, how many? I mean, geez, percentage-wise.
There's just too many rocks in the pockets of Punch Drunk Love for it to survive a swim across the lake. Yeah. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
I think that's exactly what I'm saying.
That's also a fair point, too. Yeah. So let's just say we'll all be curious.
I am curious to see it. But again, the marketing is always wrong on this because before the movie's already out, people are shoving it in your face.
Sure.
Adam Sandler, award winner. You know, Adam Sandler is going to win an award for this. Well, here's an idea. Let the movie come out and let people see it first. And then you could say, see, wasn't that good? Doesn't he deserve an Oscar? Don't shove down our throats how we're supposed to think about a performance before it's even out yet.
But they do that. Mm-hmm. They do that
with everybody.
Of course.
They do that. Yeah. This is not the only movie they've ever done that with. Yeah.
This is how you get an Oscar buzz. This is how you do it. Look. I know you're watching everything through 51st Dates and Billy Madison. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying you have a bias. It's not an incorrect one. We all have them.
We've all seen, sadly, some portion of Little Nicky.
Yeah.
We know it exists, and so we can't pretend that it happened. And I get that, Chris. You're not trying.
All right, that's fair. I'll meet you halfway. All right.
But in fairness, this is how you get Oscar buzz.
Yeah.
And they've done it.
And frankly, it's working. Like I said, that is kind of what makes me, I've got to see how, there's any ability to that.
Purely from a marketing standpoint, they've actually done a fine job of, I know about this movie through social media because they're doing it on Instagram. Sure. They're doing clips.
It's really smart.
That's saturating. Really smart.
Now, is it a streaming movie or is it going to be theatrical?
Theatrical is what I thought it was.
I think, I don't know. That's a great question. Aaron, do we know the...
That should be added to those ads.
Yeah, someone might want to tell us in those ads. It's like, Well, no, it's theatrical because I have seen the poster at the ArcLight.
Okay.
Well, Mike, but is it doing like what the Irishman is? It was in theaters to get Oscar qualification. So right, Netflix has been we've talked about this. They're very smart at releasing both, and I think other people might be catching up. So is that Aaron? I'm looking into it. Oh, I thought he left. I thought he was just like, I can't listen.
He'll call it in from his car on his way home. Is it? Yeah.
The dog's running the board.
Oh, they're saying it's so easy a dog could do it, Aaron. That's, that's what they just said.
No, he did.
Your job is so easy a dog could do it. That's what I heard.
How much was that budget? Woof. Oh, 40 million? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Got it.
Oh. Oh, yeah. James Mangold did direct it. You're right.
I think I'm more impressed with the fact that you understand dog.
So we'll see on Uncut Gems for sure. It says it's printed to 35 mil, so that's the actual
name.
For sure.
Yeah.
For now. But yeah. The
Softy Brothers, the Softy Brothers.
Who are they? Aaron, does your dog know who the Softy Brothers are?
I just know their name, but what did they do, the Softy Brothers?
Black Balloon.
Yeah.
Good Time.
I don't think I've seen these films. Oh,
Good Time. It's the one I want to see, actually.
Hmm.
That's a few years old from, it was Pattinson, Robert Pattinson.
Oh, I didn't see that movie.
No, I didn't either. That was great.
All right. That is our show.
Yo.
Ladies and gentlemen, our final studio show in the studio.
The studio show in the studio?
Yeah, it is.
Pretty convenient.
Yes.
Really, that's,
thank God. Yeah. We found a studio for our studio show.
And we want to thank you guys very much for being with us on this journey. We have the final live show in 2 days, 2 day countdown, 48 hours.
Look, we've sold a fair amount of tickets, but there are
some left.
There are some left. You can buy them at the door because the Dynasty is a pretty big size facility. Come by, check it out.
Free earbuds DVD.
Free earbuds DVD if you buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have a bunch of merch that will be literally a jar with a pay what you think is fair. And you can take whatever you want. If you like 5Xs and extra small.
Yes. You know, we have a lot of girly extra small shirts.
So if you have a child.
Yes, we have a very small
likes
child.
Podcasting,
who likes podcasting. Yeah, you can walk out with a shirt.
Or if you want your dog to wear it when it works as a podcast producer.
Yes, and,
you can do that.
And also we have Doug Benson CDs. So. So we have plenty of those left. So we'll be bringing those as well. So Neil. Now, we're about to record your special Patreon bonus episode, but where can people find you online? Or
At the moment, the Twitter is at FilmNerdNeil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it was on the Comedy Film Nerds Facebook page occasionally.
Mm-hmm. We won't be deleting that. That'll stay active.
Oh, good. We can still poke our heads in.
Yeah, we'll poke our heads in there and say hi to everybody for sure.
Maybe during that Oscar... Maybe
exactly. We might
show,
do a couple should wills through the Facebook page. Perhaps. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that what we're going to do?
So, well, sure. Yeah.
Maybe. Okay, cool.
Maybe. Yeah.
There was discussion.
Yeah.
It might happen. Might not, but it might.
Mm-hmm.
I was just saying, do I need to do something? Should I? Did I forget to
well,
do something?
You know, we still have till midnight. If the Kickstarter funds, we'll be doing a Star Wars spoiler ep. So there That's is right. that extra bonus content that could still happen. If you guys come on, I know there's some angel investors in there. Can get a couple thousand in there before the end. You've got until midnight. Hurry. But, you know, people are listening to this a week later. Oh, I missed it. So Neil, you're on Twitter.
And, Film Nerd Neil. And, you know, the Facebook occasionally. Yeah.
And, you know, you have one final article on the website, right?
I plan on doing one this week, the film news this week.
Yep.
So.
All right. So check that out for sure.
Yeah.
All right. And as you guys know, that's the only thing I'm promoting right now until midnight. It's the it's the Kickstarter. If you guys could get us there, Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. And then after tomorrow, you guys can unmute my Twitter feed because I've been promoting it relentlessly for 30 days. Graham, what do you got coming up? Other than our live show on Thursday.
other than the live show Thursday at Dynasty Typewriter, Friday the 13th, Ron Placone and I, who's been a guest on this show.
You're not going to take a day off? after the live show.
Next Tuesday, I'm going to go surfing.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday, I've set Tuesday. I'm not going to do anything next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's the day off.
That's the day off. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Friday, we're doing the Progressive Comedy Tour at the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. Mm-hmm. Saturday, we're doing Progressive Comedy Tour at the Sycamore Tavern, the Dojo of Comedy, which is a really cool venue. So I'm doing like, you know, Ron and I are each doing like long headline sets. Mm-hmm. The Saturday show, Jimmy Dore and Steph Zamorano are going to pop in to do sets. And then I have a bunch of tour dates with Ron Placone, Progressive Comedy Tour in 2020. We're going to Tucson, San Francisco, Orlando, Miami, Seattle, Portland. And we're adding tour dates all the time. Nashville, Chicago, Milwaukee, all that stuff. So go to grahamelwood.com for all of my tour dates. And since
and then yeah, this is it, this is the last Tuesday show. Although, you know, I wanted to mention too, we'll still be, have the Twitter feed will be active, the so Comedy Film Arts, so we're going to be dropping in there to let you guys know, you know, things periodically, and the Facebook will stay open, and then we're going to keep the feed available if you guys want to check out some extra some older episodes. We'll probably keep that up for the next year, and the website will still be up too, but a more pared down version. There won't be a store or message boards or anything like that. It'll be more just the archive for the articles.
Yeah, so you can, all the articles are archived, all the old episodes are archived. You want to listen to old episodes, I think they're all still on the Comedy Film Nerds app.
if you want to get the Comedy Film Nerds app
I think it's $2. I don't know what it made.
Yeah, $1.99 $2.99
So you can go scroll through. I was scrolling through and seeing, like, you know, like the first Jimmy Dore was on episode 9 and all.
I dare say there's about 600 episodes on there.
There's more than 600. Yeah. But yeah, so all that stuff will still be on there, and I don't know. You might be talking movies elsewhere.
I might be. Well, there might be an announcement on Thursday that we'll see. Might something be happening at the live show? A little announcement being made. Yes.
I was wondering too. I might once a month for Political Vigilante just talk movies, just to do it.
To break it up.
Just to shake it up a little bit.
Sure.
Just to shake it up. But yeah, if you want to listen to my left wing shenanigans, go to Political Vigilante.
Yeah, we're not going away. We're easy to find on the internet if you want to see what we're up to. Yeah. So okay, well, we can't thank you guys enough, and we will talk to you on Thursday. Thanks again, everybody, and as always, I'm Chris Mancini.
I'm Graham Elwood,
and as always, Han shot first.
The second to last, we're going to shake up the order.
I know, isn't that weird? Yeah, we kind of changed it up a little. Yeah,
threw me for a loop. 600 of these way, then 598 one way.
It's like Yeah, it's like a little, you know, one little monkey wrench in the gears and doing? Like it blows up.
Everything goes off the rails. I don't know what was happening.
Bye-bye.